from bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks, Ollie. Good stuff. Welcome to Wednesday's programme. Freezing cold day here in Manchester. Hope you're warm. Hope you're wrapped up well. Thanks for joining me. It's just after 5 p.m. It's a live show, of course. RichieAllen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2, TriggerWarning.tv, and, of course, TuneIn Radio. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome to the show. It's just you and me today. Got a very interesting news roundup for you over the course of the next 60 to 75 to 80 minutes. I have no idea how long it'll last, but it'll be at least an hour. I guarantee you that. Fascinating things for you and me to talk about today. Do tweet the program as it's live right now at Richie Allen Show, of course, the Twitter handle. Love to hear your thoughts on the stories that I'll be talking about during the course of the program. It is Europe's most listened to independent radio show, your Richie Allen Show, and it is Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. That's the one. Yeah, you well. It's cold out there. I've said it before, going to say it again. There are people less fortunate than us on the streets. Please do what you can to help them out, even if it's a coffee, a hot chocolate, a cocoa, whatever, soup. Don't walk past them. Do that much if you can do it. It is dreadfully cold. And somebody sent me a story today about people dying, homeless people dying over the last couple of days in Scotland. There's no excuse for that. All right, so keep that in mind when the temperatures are as low and the weather is as severe as it has been in the last couple of days. Going to kick off this afternoon with the World Economic Forum in Davos. The great and the good are in Davos in Switzerland. The World Economic Forum mentioned it fleetingly last night, and they're improving the state of the world. That's what's going on, apparently. They're improving the state of the world. The great and the good. But no Donald Trump and no Theresa May. They're not there. But Bono is there. And Will I Am is there. And Bill Gates is there. Here's Sky News' Ed Conway reporting today from Davos. Ed Conway of Sky.
Despite the fact that Theresa May is not here, Donald Trump is not here, there are many other luminaries, both of politics and of other fields as well, business people. I saw the chief executive of Apple for the first time coming here, Tim Cook, having various meetings with people on the sidelines, and it's not just business people as well. There are various celebrities as well. Matt Damon, Will.i.am, Bono was here as well. It's an odd collection of people, it must be said, here at Davos. But as far as they're concerned, the catch line here is committed to improving the state of the world. Are they doing it, Kay? We'll have to see.
Don't ask Kay. Kay doesn't know her arse from her elbow. God love her. We will hear from Kay on an unrelated matter in a minute. So you have all the celebrities at Davos, eh? And they're calling it improving the state of the world. For me, that evokes memories of we are the world, we are the children, we are the ones who make a brighter day, so let's start giving.
There's a choice we're making, we're saving our own lives.
It's true.
We'll make a better day, just you and me.
Just you and me and Bono and Bill Gates. The world is broken, but Bono and Bill Gates and Matt Damon will make it all better. Mad times. I want to give a big shout out to Rory McKeown, who listens to the programme. Rory, how you doing? He sent me a very interesting article this morning, which I would have missed because it was published on CNBC.com. I'll pay more attention to that. Not normally a priority for me, but a very interesting article. Thanks, Rory. Related to Bill Gates and Davos. Here's the headline. Are you ready for this? Bill Gates my best investment turned $10 billion into $200 billion worth of economic benefit. Now, that is a massive winner, 20 to 1 that. Bill Gates, my best investment turned $10 billion into $200 billion. What was it? What was it, Bill? Well, according to CNBC, investing in global health organizations aimed at increasing access to vaccines creates a 20 to 1 return in economic benefit. Now, how do we know this? Well, Bill Gates was speaking with CNBC this morning. Over the past two decades, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has donated a bit more than $10 billion into mainly three groups. And those groups are the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria, and the Global Polio Eradication Initiative. So Bill has spent $10 billion with them and got $200 billion back. How does it work? It's marvellous. Well, Bill will walk us through the math right here, speaking to NBC, WNBC.
You've invested $10 billion in vaccinations over the last two decades, and you figured out the return on investment for that, and it kind of stunned me. Can you walk us through the math?
Well, it's pretty impressive that when you take these vaccines, get them to be very inexpensive by making big volume commitments, have that right relationship with the private sector, get the delivery system so they're really getting the coverage out there, you literally save millions of lives. And 20 years ago when we created these new multilateral organizations, Gavi for the vaccines, Global Fund for HIV, TB and malaria, we didn't know they'd be successful. They've gone through lots of challenges about making sure the money gets there, making sure the efficiency is right. But as we look at upcoming replenishments for those, and we've got so much distraction politically that the international needs like this could get eclipsed.
Christ, he drones on, doesn't he? But listen to the rest of it.
Eclipsed, if we're not careful. You know, we see a phenomenal track record. It's been $100 billion overall that the world's put in. Our foundation is a bit more than $10 billion. But we feel there's been over a 20 to 1 return. So if you just look at the economic benefits, that's a pretty strong number compared to anything else. The human benefit in millions of lives saved. So, you know, we're here with a pretty strong message that although all these other issues are very important, let's not forget about the great success in global health and maintaining that commitment.
Arr, there's gold in them thar hills, them vaccine hills. Loads of money in sticking the world's children with a tidal wave of toxic shit that will destroy their immune system. Now, that clip there, I've edited that clip in sequence. So I've not edited it and rearranged the wording of it, but I've edited it to take out the waffle, and I'll play that for you in a minute. Keep it in mind. Investing in global health organizations, increasing access to vaccines made $10 billion turn into $200 billion for Bill Gates. Of course, it's a sure thing. Now, long-time friends of mine, listeners that have been with me for many, many years, will remember me making special shows about foreign aid to third world countries. Foreign aid, what is it? Well, it's your tax pounds and euro and dollars and yen going to developing countries. But it's not money. It's not money, you see. So when the government of the United Kingdom commits to a certain amount of GDP to be released as foreign aid, it isn't money. The government of third world countries don't get money to decide where the aid is spent. It's often healthcare products and vaccines. And groups like the World Health Organization decide on behalf of the developing countries where the money is spent. See, I've done shows on this where I've proved this before. And in many cases, it's vaccines and sanitation projects where massive companies like Nestle get to come in and run the water of that country using a subsidiary or otherwise. It's a wonderful bit of gangsterism. Hello, developing third world country that's got fuck all because we've stolen all your resources. Hello, hello, nice to see you again. Would you like some foreign aid? Oh, we'd love some. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll give you a couple $100 billion, but we're not going to give you the money. We're going to spend it for you. And we're going to vaccinate the bejesus out of your children. And I'll tell you what else we're going to do. We're going to fix your water. We're going to fix all the pipes. We're going to get water, clean water, piped into all of the homes in the country. But we've got people to do that for you. Yes, it's a company called Maalox or something weird like that. It's just a subsidiary of a company like Nestle. It's fucking sick. But that's what happens. And vaccines are part of that as well. Birth control pills, part of that as well. Also, aid often comes in the form of third world governments allowing big pharma companies to come in and pay very poor young men and women a pittance for participating in clinical trials. This is true. Listen, in return for the foreign aid that we're not really going to give you, because we're going to spend it for you, allow us to do clinical trials on the poorest people in your country, and please pass laws that mean that we can't be sued when they grow three fucking heads. Right? We are the world. We are the children. Here's that Bill Gates clip again. This time I've edited the clip like I said I did. Still in sequence. I have not rearranged the sentences. Listen closely to what Bill says. This time with the waffle edited out. He basically just says what I've just said there.
When you take these vaccines, get them to be very inexpensive. By making big volume commitments.
Big volume commitments means that you promise the pharma companies that you're going to give hundreds of millions of these injections to a various country, right?
That right relationship with the private sector.
Get the right relationship with the private sector. Basically, you take over the private sector.
And 20 years ago, when we created these new multilateral organizations, Gavi for the vaccines, Global Fund for HIV, TB and malaria. We didn't know they'd be successful.
Ah, you did, Bill. You're a lying motherfucker. You knew they'd be successful because you took over the private sector. You took over the World Health Organization. You've made vaccines cheap because you promised that hundreds of millions of them would be delivered to countries all around the world. Basically, Bill, it's full spectrum fucking dominance. You couldn't possibly fail, could you?
It's been $100 billion overall that the world's put in.
Ah, now the world put $100 billion in. Bill Gates Foundation put $10 billion in. So when Bill Gates says the world put $100 billion in, he means they did so through foreign aid, which I've just explained.
All that the world's put in. Our foundation, it's been $100 billion overall that the world's put in.
Foreign aid.
Our foundation is a bit more than $10 billion. But we feel there's been over a 20-to-1 return. So if you just look at the economic benefits, that's a pretty strong number compared to anything else.
Marvelous. We're killing the whole world, one fucking vaccine at a time. Just you and me. There you are. Bill Gates admitting on NBC that he... He's evil is beyond, if you combine every James Bond villain in every film ever, C. Montgomery Burns, Genghis Khan, Adolf Hitler, Bill Gates is that on steroids. Straight from the horse's mouth, 17 minutes past the hour. Thanks to Rory again for sending me the story. I should be writing my own rap songs. Theresa May has told MPs attempting to delay Brexit that it won't solve the situation. Won't solve the situation. The decision remains the same, she said. The deal, or no Brexit. She was speaking at Prime Minister's Questions today. The Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn accused her of having a closed mind to other Brexit options, such as Labour's own plan. But Theresa May attacked him for refusing to meet with her and said he didn't have a clue what his own policy meant. Here's the snippet of that at PMQs today.
But what I have been wanting to do and have been doing with members across this House is sit down and talk about how we can secure support in this House for a deal. The Right Honourable Gentleman has been willing to sit down with Hamas, Hezbollah and the IRA without preconditions, yet he won't meet me to talk about Brexit.
He'll talk with IRA and all these terrorists and Hamas, and he won't talk to me. What did Jeremy say?
In this case, he's neither present nor involved.
There you are.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Mr. Speaker, actually, I did reach out to the Prime Minister last September when I offered to discuss our deals with her. And it appears that, Mr. Speaker, that while the door to her office may well be opened, apparently the minds inside it are completely closed.
Marvellous. Yeah, yeah. Pure theatre, the same shite, just a different day. Before we have a wee chat, more, a little bit more of Brexit, not so much more, but a little bit more. Let me read a few tweets, because I said I would. The Twitter handle, if you don't know already, is at Richie Allen Show. Dean Smith, how you doing, Dean? Richie, if the vaccines cause harm, Bill's not viable. Bill isn't responsible. The taxpayer is. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant scheme, says Dean Smith there. Absolutely right. Hi to Sean McDonald there. Hi to Mwinga, who says that he recalls the show that I did about foreign aid and how foreign aid actually works. Economists like, who is that economist you're showing me there? Let's have a look. Dambisa Moyo have always debunked the foreign aid given to African countries with great research. Thanks. I'll check out Dambisa Moyo, Mwinga, and see. Is she available to come on the programme? Hi to Ruth in Australia. How you doing, Ruth? Fascinating how celebrities get poor people to cough up their loose change. I'd like to see how much they donate themselves. Good stuff. Well, do you know what, Ruth? You see, if you're in the inner circle, as Bono and Matt Damon and others are with Bill Gates, I have no doubt that Bill Gates has said to Bono, "Bono, this is the most corrupt, wonderful little cabal cartel ever devised. I control everything. It can't possibly lose. So give us a million or two and I'll invest for you in this vaccine Ponzi scheme and you'll get a massive return." So I'm sure some of the celeb pals of the mega maniacal Bill Gates have benefited. Patricia in Switzerland. How you doing, Patricia? Tweets, "There's nothing like celebrities to make the world a better place." That's right. This is mythomania. That's another subject I did a programme on some moons ago. Mythomania. Thanks, Patricia. Excellent point. Hi to Liz Jones. Good evening to you and to all listening, says Liz. Hi to Ian McKee, who says, "Lifetime actors, Bono and Gates and Matt Damon et al." Absolutely right. Hi to Jennifer. How you doing, Jennifer? Who says that she loves the show. I don't normally read out quotes from people who say they love the show. It's very egotistical. I don't do that. But thanks, Jennifer. The point is she's listening to the show live for the first time today. Thanks very much, Jennifer. Welcome to the live show. Hi to Martin in Spain and to Paul Alawi as well. Keep those tweets rolling in. Hi to Elaine and Siraj. Now, you know I love the Ginger Ninja. Who's the Ginger Ninja? There's only one. It's Kay Burley. We love Kay. Kay is in Northern Ireland today. But she's not in Northern Ireland, Kay. She's in Northern Ireland, and then she's in Ireland, and then she's in Northern Ireland. She's jumping backwards and forwards between certain points on the border, trying to get the message across that the drama is building about the backstop. So Kay was sent by Sky News to one border crossing between Ireland and Northern Ireland, a place called Belcoo in Fermanagh, which I know very well. It's all about the border and the backstop, like I said. This is funny stuff. I wish I could show you the visuals. Kay is standing on a freezing cold bridge in a sleepy village, walking through pubs and then walking over the bridge and then back over and then over the other side. It's quality stuff. Do you want to hear Mad Kay? This is what the media does, you see. This is our Kay, the Ginger Ninja.
Hello, everyone. A very good afternoon. The Kay Burley Show comes to you live from two separate countries today, linked by one...
It's coming from two separate countries today.
Stone Bridge. On one side, the village of Belcoo. You can't see it. I can. That's in Northern Ireland. Behind me here, Black Lion in the Republic of Ireland.
As mad as a box of frogs.
Ireland. The people here think of themselves as one community. At a brisk pace, it takes just over a minute to cross this bridge. I know I've done it a few times already today, but this represents the biggest obstacle to delivering Brexit. The EU has confirmed it will enforce a hard border in the event of no deal, despite the risk it would pose to peace. It could mean border checks, separate rules, and maybe even different time zones on either side of this bridge. An issue that was hardly mentioned during the referendum campaign has proved to be one of the biggest headaches for negotiators.
Ah, Mad Kay. Of course the backstop wasn't mentioned during the campaign, Kay, you mad lunatic, you. Of course they didn't talk about the backstop in the referendum campaign, because it's a non-issue. All the UK and Irish governments need to say is, listen, no return to the hard border, no stops, no custom checks, right? Fuck the EU, right? We'll do our own bilateral deal, end of story, it's not going to happen. That's all they have to do. Of course it's a non-issue. It's something that was dreamt up by the Brussels elite to stall Brexit. If they had thought of it during the referendum campaign, they would have used it as a weapon. They didn't think of it because it's a non-issue. It's just come up in the last few months by those determined to stop us leaving. And as for clock differences, the idea that the UK might decide to, I don't know, stay in British summertime and not put the clocks forward and all that nonsense, that's just nonsense. Why put that out there as an issue? It's a nonsense. Backstop is a desperate move by the Brussels elite, and it's worked because the media hasn't reported on it. Former Chancellor of the Exchequer George Osborne said today that it is inevitable, seeing as Theresa May cannot get any support for her deal. George Osborne saying Article 50 will be extended, meaning that we will not be leaving the European Union on March 29th. Of course, the European Union is loving all this. Here's Michel Barnier, the EU's chief negotiator, he's speaking this afternoon.
There are two possible ways to leave the EU. Number one, an orderly withdrawal based on the agreement that we have built step by step with the UK from the last 18 months. Number two, a disorderly withdrawal, leaving the EU without a deal, is a default scenario, and there appears to be a majority in the House of Commons to oppose a no deal. But, ladies and gentlemen, opposing a no deal will not stop no deal.
Opposing a no deal will not stop no deal. Of course, the European Union and Barnier can be stubborn because they know that Labour backbenchers and Tory backbenchers and others are tabling amendments to stop the UK leaving with no deal, which is the way we should leave. There should be no deal. We should just go. Right? David has just tweeted, how do we know politicians lie? Well, they refer to each other as right and honourable right off the bat. A lot of people would agree with you there. So the European Union are sitting pretty, laughing their collective arses off at the chaos here in the UK. All these amendments that are being tabled by Yvette Cooper and others to say that no deal must be taken off the table and that the process of leaving must be given back to Parliament, that the government shouldn't be doing it, even though the government was elected, Parliament should take it back to prevent it happening. So about Yvette Cooper and her amendments. Yvette Cooper's Labour colleague John McDonnell, who is the Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, was on BBC Newsnight last night with Kirsty Wark. So Kirsty Wark says to John McDonnell, she says, if Yvette Cooper's amendment succeeds and leaving with no deal is off the table, surely Article 50 would be extended, right? Have a listen to Kirsty Wark and then John McDonnell's answer.
Right, well, let's deal with the Labour Fund budget amendment first of all. If it is chosen and passed, it would require major renegotiation with the EU. I have the amendment in front of me. Now, you would surely have to be honest in that case and say there would have to be an extension of Article 50. You could not get it through on time.
Yvette Cooper's put an amendment down, which I think is sensible. It says to the government, you've run down the clock so much, it looks as though if you can't get a deal by February 26th, she said, we'll then have to look. The government will then have to bring forward proposals to extend that. So I think it's increasingly likely already that we'll have to take that option because the government's run the clock down.
Well, let's look at that then. That is a cross-party amendment led by Yvette Cooper. Will you back that amendment? Will you vote for that amendment if it's taken?
We'll go through our normal process of consultation, then determine on the whip, but I think it's a sensible proposal.
Answer the question, arsehole. Will you support the Yvette Cooper amendment to take Article 50, excuse me, to take no deal off the table, thus bringing about the extension of Article 50? Just answer the question.
I mean, your own shadow business secretary this morning actually called it a fantastic amendment. If it's a fantastic amendment, you're surely going to back it.
Highly likely. We have to go through our own processes, though, within the party of how we determine. That's how we've held people together. So I think it is sensible. It's something that we already backed Yvette on the amendment to the finance bill, which was against a no deal. So it's highly likely. But we'll go through our normal process of consultation with our members.
What a slimeball McDonnell is. Blairites are running the show now. Blairites are running Labour. I should say now. It hasn't changed. You know, the ordinary men and women of this country, of which I am one, most of them whose politics are on the left, they believed Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell. When Corbyn won the Labour leadership election contest, they believed him. They believed that finally a socialist was in charge, that things would change. He was never in charge. Yvette Cooper and Hilary Benn and Stella Greasy Creasy and all the rest of them, all the Blairites, all the fake socialists are running the show. McDonnell and Corbyn are betraying their own constituents. McDonnell was asked by Wark to comment on the fact that a poll shows that the majority of voters who voted for no deal. Listen carefully to this. A new poll shows that the majority of people who voted to leave voted for no deal. No deal was in their minds when they voted. They never expected years of protracted negotiations. They expected we would leave. A point Kirsty Wark makes to John McDonnell. Listen carefully.
In your own constituency, the majority of your constituents voted leave.
Yeah.
And I wonder what you think about the idea that if you are adamant that a no-deal Brexit would be catastrophic, are Labour members, some of them your constituents, are people that supported you in the country who are not so scared of a no deal. Are they wrong? Because actually, although it was small figures, in the most recent ICM poll, the majority of voters who voted for anything voted for a no deal.
The latest DCIM poll has shown that the majority of people who voted for anything voted for no deal. This is a fact, it's not conjecture. And she's a BBC presenter. The BBC doesn't like this, but she's telling the truth. The appetite is for a no-deal Brexit. Walking away, as I've said 1,000 times before. I'm going to play that little section again. I hope I've marked it in the right place.
In the most recent ICM poll, the majority of voters who voted for anything voted for a no-deal.
I think we
voted for a no-deal. She's got McDonnell by the short and curlies. But McDonnell says, incredibly, that, well, I know better than everybody else.
I think we all have to come to our view on this. I'm sure some of my constituents will think...
8%
Some of my constituents will think that a no deal will not harm the economy. I'm saying, as the local MP and as the Shadow Chancellor who's looked at these matters, it will, and therefore we need a deal which will protect jobs and the economy, and that's what Labour's been advocating.
I'm the Shadow Chancellor. I've looked at it, and I'm telling you, it will. It doesn't matter what you think.
What kind of fuckery?
It's a waking nightmare is what it is, Amy. That's what it is. A waking nightmare. The fix is in. The fix is in and that's it. McDonnell then acknowledged that Labour amendments are also going forward re a people's vote. So all the lies that you heard from Jeremy Corbyn about not supporting a second referendum are being exposed and unravelled now. The journalist Martin Daubeny was on Sky News this AM. Now, he's a Brexiteer. And Martin Daubeny is totally depressed at what's happening and all of this, what I've just been talking about. Daubeny made the point that the Emmanuel Macron and Angela Merkel meeting yesterday to, you know, sign another bilateral agreement between France and Germany. Daubeny says, Martin Daubeny on Sky this morning, the journalist, says that the Macron and Merkel meeting yesterday basically reminded us of why we voted to leave in the first place. Martin Daubeny.
You know, pass the bucket. It's the Macron and Merkel loving once again. They're in Berlin signing a closer pact in a time of division within the EU. They're coming close together, which you might say is fine. One of the things I'd like to talk about is it was we were told that Leave told so many lies during the campaign. One of the great lies of the Remain campaign was there will be no European army. This won't happen. It's fantasy. It's a scare story. Well, a direct quote yesterday, they want a common military culture, and this is our contribution towards the emergence of a European army. So that's going to happen. But where it gets really interesting and I think divisive and offensive is she talks about this is the reaction to the populism and nationalism that are gaining strength in all of our nations. For the first time in a country, Britain is leaving the EU just 74 years, a human lifespan after the end of the Second World War. Okay, so let's lay nationalism and populism at the door of the UK, totally omitting to admit that the rise of populism was entirely driven by the open borders policy of Germany and latterly France. Nothing to do with us. And as for kind of somehow blaming us for, you know, populism because of the Second World War, it's grotesque.
Very interesting what he said there. It staggers me daily that more journalists just can't see the bigger picture. He quite rightly mocked the statement made by Angela Merkel yesterday about the rise in populism and how dangerous it is, when, as he pointed out, it was Merkel's decision to allow 1 million migrants into Germany, and a catastrophic, lunatic idea, and executed with little care, little thought, on the face of it, on the surface, that's what it's meant to look like, for the people of Germany. And, of course, it was all done by design. It happened. Populism and the right is on the rise. That was exactly the intended consequence of it. I wonder when will journalists like Daubeny begin to understand what the bigger picture is, what the real agenda is here. Because he's good, he's right in what he's saying about the EU military alignment, which people refer to as the EU army, which will ultimately just mean that there'll be central control of the running of nation states' armies. It's pretty much the same thing. There's an intervention then. As Daubeny is speaking, a woman called Nikki Hodgson, who's an author, she was reviewing the newspapers with him today. Nikki Hodgson puts her oar in. Have a listen to what she says.
It's grotesque.
She's not trying to say that. People. She's trying to remind people that the whole point of the European project was to keep people safe after that human catastrophe.
Oh, and Germany builds a massive army. Oh, that sounds familiar.
What would we do if we had more opportunity? We just increase our military forces. It's the right of the country to decide to do that. There's a huge cry amongst Brexiteers to increase the power of the military
Not with the European army.
Okay, we'll leave that there. That argument can continue for some time, and we are running out of time. I'm going to get through another couple of stories in today's papers.
Let's just stop before this gets serious and we might get some real discussion on what's going on. And incredibly this afternoon, it's a breaking story this in the last hour or so. I've not got any audio, but Jacob Rees-Mogg, of course of the European Research Group, hardline Brexiteer, if you believe that, terminological inexactitude, darling. Mogg has been urging Theresa May to suspend Parliament if attempts to stop a no-deal Brexit are successful. Mogg suggested that Mrs. May could prorogue Parliament if a backbench bill tabled by Yvette Cooper and Nick Bowles blocks a disorderly Brexit, and if it's backed by MPs. So if Cooper and Tory Nick Bowles' amendment is backed by Parliament and throws out the possibility of leaving without a deal, Mogg is saying that there is a precedent, there is a pathway by which May could go to the Queen and have Parliament suspended. And that's a breaking story, and it's getting a lot of coverage as I speak to you this afternoon. It's one massive drama. It's one massive big old drama playing out now, and it's got people gripped. So prorogue Parliament if Yvette Cooper is successful, because Mogg is pointing out that this would be patently unconstitutional and would be illegal and shouldn't happen, that no deal Brexit could be thrown out and taken off the table. Therefore, May should say, well, I'm going to suspend Parliament. More on this undoubtedly in the next couple of days. You're with the Richie Allen Show for Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. And my name is Richie Allen. The UK police is warning that the far right is on the rise and we better do something about them. Ooh. I'll be talking about that when I return after this exceptionally brilliant tune from the Cranberries and Dolores O'Riordan. This is Dreams on the Richie Allen Show, 21 minutes to the top of the hour. Good afternoon to you. Good to be with you. Lucky enough to see the Cranberries in their pomp many, many moons ago. Exceptionally brilliant live. Dolores O'Riordan, rest in peace. Dreams on the Richie Allen Show. Rose Petals, Petals Rosa tweets, if marches don't do anything and politicians don't listen, then God forbid, I fear there will be violent revolution. Something is brewing and it's sinister, says Rosa Petals on Twitter. Hi to Faisal. Hi to Rich, who tweets, I'm surprised the media is allowed to talk Brexit in case they could cause offence or unnecessary stress on their listeners. Sorry, I mean snowflakes. Yes, now, Rosa Petals and your comment about violence, right, which nobody supports. Nobody I want to be friends with anyway. Violence is not good. Listen to this. The febrile atmosphere around Brexit could be exploited by far-right extremists. Who said that? Well, it was said by the most senior counter-terrorism officer in the UK, a man called Neil Basu. He said 18 terror plots were foiled in Britain since 2017. Four of them were far right. And we're told to believe these people. They never present any proof that they filed anything. We've just got to believe them. Yeah. Four of them are on the far right, said Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu, the top senior counter-terrorism officer. He said leaving the EU with no deal would be very bad for policing. It's all fear-mongering. Here he is. Would you like to hear a bit of him? Here he is speaking to the BBC Radio 4 Today programme this morning, Neil Basu.
We're talking about extreme right-wing behaviour that might lead to terrorism, and you've seen some trials taking place of a group called National Action that the Home Secretary prescribed, and that's what we're very wary of. We saw an uplift in hate crime following the referendum. My concern is that, you know, this is a very divisive issue. We know that for our communities. It's polarised a lot of families, a lot of communities, and we're appealing for calm and reflection and debate. We will absolutely support any kind of lawful protest, but where it veers into the unlawful territory, we will and must take action.
Why do you think there is that possibility of it veering into unlawful activity?
Well, we've seen some of the behaviour from very, very small groups. If you think about what happened outside of Parliament just before Christmas and just after Christmas, we had months of very peaceful, very lawful, no problems protest outside Parliament. And then a very small group of people managed to turn that atmosphere. And that can't be right.
Yeah.
And we must make absolutely sure that that doesn't happen.
Isn't it strange that Assistant Police Commissioner Basu, how you had months and months and months of people protesting and no bother, and then all of a sudden, when it was really necessary to focus people's minds on the fact that Brexiteers are all a bunch of moronic racists, funny that a tiny little group of men came along singing football songs. Really strange that. Of course, the BBC presenter wouldn't have the cojones or the, I don't know, whatever. Whatever the female equivalent of cojones are. Wouldn't have the ovaries to ask him that question. Be very afraid, be very afraid. He told the BBC the terror threat is still at severe. Now, I might have Alzheimer's, dear listener. I might have. Might be losing my mind as I get older. But apart from Joe Cox, the murder of the former MP, of the MP at the time, I should say, Joe Cox. Very strange, by the way. That murder just before the referendum, only a few days before the referendum. Very strange. But let's take it at face value. Let's take it at face value. But apart from the murder of Joe Cox, isn't the violence and murder coming from allegedly radicalised Muslims? Isn't it? If we take everything at face value, and I don't, if you're Muslim, don't lose your shit. Listen back to the show, going back years, listen carefully. Haven't we been told that the violence is predominantly coming from radicalised jihadists? So what's with this fear the right, we must be terrified of the right? The far right is tiny in this country. It's basically non-existent. It's a nothing. It's nothing to worry about at all. Let's be honest about it, right? However, Jonathan Birdwell, amazingly, who's a talking head from the Institute for Dialogue, Jonathan Birdwell told the BBC that the far right is taking over from the Islamists. I shit you not.
Yeah, I think we've seen the rise of the far-right ideology really overtaking the Islamists in some ways.
What? In the name of Christ, did you just say there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think we've seen the rise of the far-right ideology really overtaking the Islamists in some ways.
Now, the presenter's job, I like giving you these little crash courses in presenting. Not that I'm the greatest presenter of all time. I might be in the top three. But I know my job. And I did my job at very senior levels. She must now jump in there and go, hang on a second now. What was that there? About the far right overtaking the Islamist extremism in the country?
Yeah, I think we've seen the rise of the far right ideology really overtaking the Islamists in some ways.
Wow.
Over the past couple of years. And, you know, I think looking at these sorts of indicators is really telling. And means that we need to, as Neil Basu said, really make sure that we remain vigilant in...
Remain vigilant, right?
...in monitoring these groups, particularly those groups that tend to use very violent language and...
Now, we need to monitor groups that use very violent language. Language, not groups that go around kicking the shit out of people, because I'm all for rounding up groups that kick the shit out of people and locking them up, me personally, your presenter here. So if people are advocating violence against ethnic minorities or anybody else, lock them up and lock them up today. But he's talking about violent language.
Imagery. And, you know, we have to stay on top of this because I think it's an issue that will only get worse. And I think the, as he mentioned, the febrile environment with Brexit, you know, makes it more easy for these individuals to make very extreme claims about losing their country or betrayal or treason. And you see this very extreme language, which I think can have the impact of leading some individuals to think that they need to take violence into the, you know, that violence is a solution, that they need to do something like that.
That's pretty mad shit right there, isn't it? Again, a completely amoeba of a presenter. An amoeba in the chair would do a better job than the BBC presenter of grabbing this guy by the balls and asking him a few questions. An amoeba would do a better job. I was watching a show about Cheshire Zoo last night. A three-toed sloth would do a better job in a BBC studio than that useless cretin who sits there and allows him to say what he said at the very end, because it's important what he says at the end. Listen to what he says at the end.
Very extreme language, which I think can have the impact of leading some individuals to, and I think the, as he mentioned, the febrile environment with Brexit, you know, makes it more easy for these individuals to make very extreme claims about losing their country or betrayal or treason. And you see this very extreme.
Whatever you do, don't say that you've lost your country. Don't say that you've been betrayed, because, and don't say that a politician, an MP whose constituents voted to leave in massive numbers, like Yvette Cooper, and Yvette Cooper is now doing everything she can to prevent Brexit from happening. Don't say that she's a traitor, because if you do, you might very well end up on a watch list. The presenter sits there and says nothing to this guy from a think tank that's probably got links to Soros or somebody like that. I have no time for the far, far right or the far left or any of that nonsense. Never have had, never will have. We can't allow people talk about language being policed and, you know, watch lists and urging people to come forward and report on people. Because while he's talking to the BBC about this today, the Metropolitan Police have put a video out. Honest to God, Google this if you don't believe me. They've put a video out that seeks to educate people as to how they can spot an extremist. And it's all about language. So if you feel you've lost your country and that you've been betrayed, you might be on the slippery slope to extremism. Yeah, this is the Richie Allen Show. News Roundup Show today. Going to be with you for another 5 or 6 minutes. It's been a packed old show today, though, I think you'll agree. Going to finish with another health story. I came in with health and vaccines. I'm going to leave with health. These are mad times. A group of scientists in Switzerland have designed smart micro-robots that are biocompatible and highly flexible. And these robots will be ready to be inserted into people in about 5 or 6 years' time. Smart micro-robots, biocompatible and highly flexible. It's hoped that the invention will have the power to revolutionise the process of targeted drug delivery, because the micro-robots can easily change shape as they move through blood vessels in the human body. What could possibly go wrong? Excellent report on RT's Rick Sanchez show. You'll first of all hear his reporter, Rachel Blevins.
Right, so we've got a team of scientists from Switzerland who claim that they have created these smart micro-robots that are highly flexible and biocompatible, and they're saying that this could revolutionize the process of targeted drug delivery, because these micro-robots are supposed to be able to change their shape in order to adapt to their surroundings. So if they're traveling through a blood vessel or going to a targeted organ, they're supposed to be able to change their shape based on that, but not lose any speed.
That's amazing. So if I had, give me a shot over here, Kevin, if you would. Give me a shot on set. There you go. So my knee, right? Let's put, and by the way, I have bad knees from playing football. I've got serious problem in my knee that needs to be fixed. Right now, we use something called fluoroscopy, right? I know because I'm connected to a company in Miami that uses technology. They get a live x-ray and you can actually see where the needle's putting the medicine. This is like this on steroids, right?
Exactly. So it's taking it to the next level, and you would essentially be able to ingest that micro robot. And then they say that it would be created with magnetic nanoparticles, so they could then use an electromagnetic field in order to control where this robot goes and basically as it makes its way to your knee.
I can imagine it would be hyper-focused, but is this kind of pie in the sky? Or, I mean, is this, what's your research tell you, that this is something we might actually be able to do, or is this a bunch of eggheads in a laboratory somewhere wishing that someday we could do this?
Good question. When will it be rolled out? Now, my suspicion is that it's been around for quite a while, and that, well, it's already been used on people willing and not so willing, but Rachel thinks 5, 6, 7 years maybe.
We can do this.
It's going to take a few years before this actually becomes a thing that comes on the market, but the team of scientists that's behind it, this is something that they've been working on for around 15 years, and even though we may have, you know, 5 to 10 more years before something like this becomes available, they are looking at creating it in a way that it would be cost effective and something that maybe the average, you know, citizen or member of the public would be able to use and take advantage of.
Good stuff. There are people in this audience, and there are friends of mine who've come on this program who believe that we are ingesting nanobots already, unawares, that we don't have any idea, through the air and through the water, etc. Load of stories about Japan going cashless in the news in the last couple of days. Japan is aiming to get, depending on which newspaper you believe, is planning on going 40 to 55% cashless in the next couple of years. Incredible, isn't it? No opposition to this. Going to cashless payments. It's all pretty mad. Going to read a few quick tweets and then I'm out of here because time is against me. Ricky tweets, non-compliance, don't give them violence. It will just give them an excuse to bring in the police state, which they are fermenting. And it gives idiots like the far right oxygen, says Ricky to there. In This Together tweets, why is Basu appealing for calm before anything is kicked off? Predictive programming, maybe. Maybe, mate, you might be spot on there. Patrick tweets, Basu should have concentrated on filing the plot associated with the Skripals. He failed to expose the Russophobia-motivated lies over that, so what use is he now, says Patrick. Hi to Busy as well. Hi to David Cartoon Drunk, to Daniel Ford. How you doing, Daniel? Ruth says, Richie, I've never heard of the so-called far right become head choppers, she says, or throw acid in the faces of women. She makes a very good point there, and one that I couldn't disagree with. Liz tweets, Richie, I thought Jack and Ori was taken off air years ago. It's back now. Thanks very much for that, Liz, as well. Hi to JP. Hi to Samantha, who says, Richie, there are better ways, like stop paying our taxes, if I remember rightly. Christopher Monckton explained this on this show a few weeks ago. He did take it on. Google Christopher Monckton and Richie Allen, and you'll get the most recent podcast. It's on Podomatic, iTunes, and Spotify. I can't keep reading out the tweets because I'm just coming to the end of the programme. Patricia tweets, anything with the word smart in it, I would suggest beware, and I would agree with Patricia 100% there. Absolutely right. That's it for today. We haven't reverted to a one-hour show. Don't panic. I'll be back tomorrow with a two-hour show where I have two terrific guests. Maria Heller is back on the show after a long absence, and Gerard McNamara joins me. You don't want to miss Gerard McNamara. Last time he was on with me was over 2 years ago. Fascinating man, talking about British imperialism in the 21st century, ISIS and all the rest of it, and much more besides. Gerard McNamara, two-hour show tomorrow, and I will be with you live on Friday afternoon with a roundup of the week's biggest stories, some music, and quite possibly a guest as well. That's Friday on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2, and all the other platforms as well. Do tweet out and share the first part of this programme. The first part was important about Bill Gates and vaccines and the World Economic Forum. There's some real eye-opening stuff in there, if I do say so myself. Thanks again to Rory for the tip-off about what Gates was saying. Look after yourselves and one another. We'll do it all again tomorrow for 2 hours. Don't whinge. Don't whinge. You know, this programme today took me the best part of 8 hours to prepare on its own. Yes, it did. I prefer to have guests, but it couldn't happen today, guests anyway. It's a long old slog putting together an hour of news like this. Join me tomorrow at 5, leaving you with some Bob Seger. This is Roll Me Away. Roll me away, bejesus. That was the Richie Allen Show for Wednesday, the 23rd of January, 2019. Look after yourselves and one another. Have a lovely Wednesday evening. This is Bob. Bye for now. Speak tomorrow. Bye.